And hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Once again, we're not inside the studio today. Boy, it's been a while. It seems like we've been on the road for a long time, bringing you all types of different shows. I think you can perhaps see behind me, and it looks more like we're in Augusta, Georgia, or some place like that, right? We're actually inside Moscow. A lot of people don't know this, but Moscow is surrounded by beautiful golf courses and country clubs, many of them designed by the big names like Jack Nicklaus. This one in particular is Pestovo Golf and Yacht Club. It's one of the most beautiful places just a little bit north outside in the lake area of Moscow. On your way to St. Petersburg, it's an absolutely breathtaking place to come to. And from time to time, I even like to come out here and try and hack my way around a golf course, usually not with a lot of success. But I want to thank you so much for being with us. As I have told you before, we have really been gaining an audience lately. We're reaching that 20 million mark per week now in all of our socials, and obviously with our coverage that we get from people around the world. So it's a privilege and an honor to be here, to be able to bring you another one of our special interviews. All this week, there have been a lot of famous Westerners and famous Americans who have come to Moscow for SPIEF. We brought you the interviews with Scott Ritter and George Galloway. Candace Owens was really a good interview, I thought, to get that perspective. There's one person that may, in a certain way, top them all, because he is very much in the news. He's very controversial, but more importantly, he's followed by millions and, well, I should say, tens of millions of people. And his following is interesting because he happens to have a following that is very conducive to young men throughout the world. And in many ways, it's a movement. I'm speaking of Andrew Tate, who's good enough to join us now and is going to be talking to us here and is gracious enough to grant us this interview, the first that he's done, at least in this part of the world. Andrew, it's so good to see you. Thank you, my friend, for coming.
Thanks for having me at such a beautiful location. Thank you, sir.
Isn't this amazing?
It's a great place.
Did you ever think that this would, that Moscow would look like, Russia would look like this?
Russia, perhaps. Moscow, no. But it seems that Moscow has it all. Great food, very nice place. People have been very hospitable. Really glad, happy with my visit so far.
Yeah, we're glad you're here. And let's start with, I guess, get the poison out of the way, because I know you've been going through some very difficult times. The fact that you were jailed in Romania seemed to be a shock to everyone around the world. I know the first time I saw it, I said, what is this?
Yeah.
So let me just ask you straight out, what was that like? What's it like to be one of the most recognized influencers in the world in one moment? Next thing you know, I see you in handcuffs being walked out. And what was jail like?
So it was a matrix attack from the beginning. I said that when I was being walked into jail. I said it was a matrix attack, and the primary objective of it was to attach heinous allegations to my name so that people talk about the allegations instead of my ideas. I think that in the Western world especially, there is a very serious concern regarding revolution, and they want to try to keep a control on the young masculine men of their populace. Mm. And if you have a message which is counter to any of the messages they push, then they have to make people talk about something else other than your ideas. So I was politically attacked. And the idea was to smear me, the wrap-up smear, to smear me as something I wasn't. I wasn't the first person it happened to. Unfortunately, I won't be the last. But I think that mentally, in many ways, I was prepared for it. Although it was very unfortunate, although it was very difficult, I knew that my influence had gotten too large and something was going to happen.
When you were in jail, get me inside your head. Did you cry? Did you feel hopeless?
You know what's
interesting? Were you worried?
Yeah, I was concerned. I was worried, of course, because your life is on the line. But you exist inside of your mind. And it's really, truthfully, and a fantastic chance to test yourself and prove to God and everyone around you and your family and everyone who's on the other end of the phone that you are the man you say you are. You exist inside of your mind. You can be happy because your mind's decided to be. You can be sad because your mind's decided to be. It doesn't matter what's happening to you externally. Truthfully, the secret of the world is the only thing you can control is your state of mind.
But you well know, both of us do, we're both people who've lived in this world long enough to know that we all make mistakes.
Of course.
And there must have been some thought process in you at the time where you must have had some regrets about some of the things that you may have done.
No, because I didn't do anything wrong. I never broke the law. We're 5 or 6 years from that event now, and they haven't even managed to take a case to court.
Let me just let our audience know, because I think from a journalism standpoint, this is one of the most important things that we can do, to be fair. Andrew has not been found guilty of anything.
I've been tried. They can't even take it to court.
Right. All we're talking about, one day he was arrested and he's sitting here now. So just to be fair. Yeah. And I think that's very important, by the way. And I think it's the least we can do to state.
Well, this is the basis of democracy as we're supposed to understand it, is innocent until proven guilty. But that's been completely inverted. Because if they can slander you in the media, if they can use NGOs to write endless hit pieces about you, if they can debank you and take your money away, if they can prevent you from traveling, if they can attach heinous allegations to your name, well, now you're guilty until innocent. How are you supposed to prove your innocence when you have no social media platforms, no voice, no money, can't travel, can't move, and you're tied up in years and years of pointless litigation? So innocent until proven guilty is one of the foundations of democracy, which has been completely destroyed, along with all the others inside of many Western countries now. And they knew what they were doing, and they knew that I didn't do anything wrong, and they knew it would all amount to nothing, but they still managed to succeed in putting me all over the news, locking me in jail, freezing all my banks, taking my money, keeping me on house arrest for 4 years, leaving me in jail for 6 months, all these things they did to me without even a trial going to court.
I get your point, and I understand it, and I recognize it, and I would tend to agree with you. Our country, the United States of America, I think you hail from the United States of America.
Correct.
As well, right? Our country has turned into a very lawless place. Yep. There is not a single member of Congress, with the exception of maybe Thomas Massie and a handful of others, who are not on the take. They are legally allowed to be bribed. And judges are all bribed in the United States because they take money from big law firms and then they decide cases on behalf of those law firms. So, yes, the system, Andrew, is absolutely corrupt. And you make your case is strong in that regard. But before we leave this, I do have to ask you, forget the law. Forget whether you're guilty or innocent, and right now you're absolutely innocent because you simply have been charged, which means absolutely nothing. As a guy who's very different from you in lifestyle, I'm a guy who's been married to the same woman for 36 years.
Congratulations.
I've got four beautiful kids.
Congratulations.
I've got a little granddaughter named Serena who I adore. So I have a different lifestyle than you do. Some of the things that I've seen that you've said regarding women seem mean. It just seems like you've said some things. Why would you say things like that? It makes it sound like women don't matter as much as men do when those things.
And I think that's a large misconception, because a lot of the things I say, they gender, especially in Western media, when it's not a gendered argument. I spend 99% of my time talking to and about men. I talk about how you should avoid dishonest men. You should avoid men who do not take accountability. You should stand up and you should be a good person to be honorable to those around you and pay your debts and pay your dues. I talk about men all the time.
Yeah.
The second I say stay away from dishonest women, I'm a misogynist. And this is a simple tactic that the Western media uses, and they deliberately use weaponized virtue to take something I say, gender it, and try and pretend I'm something I'm not. Because if they call me a misogynist, nobody talks about my ideas. They just simply talk about what I'm accused of.
That's fair. So let's talk about your ideas then.
Sure.
I mean, some people say, well, what is his shtick? His shtick is he empowers young men. How do you do that? What is your message?
I think the system is broken. I think the very simple path that young men have always traditionally followed no longer functions and works. Hmm. We look at a world which is very chaotic now, and that's because most young men in most nations across the world feel lost. You used to wake up and be born, and you knew your family last name, and you always lived in a particular town, and your dad had one job his whole life, and you had one mother, and they stayed together their whole life, and you lived in one place, and you went to school, you went to college, you saved your money, and you could save your money over time enough to buy another house in another area, and that became your little kingdom, and you'd find a wife and have children, and the world made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But the world is so transient now, and everything moves so quickly. Most people now go through 3 or 4 jobs a year.
Yeah.
They go through 4 or 5 partners a year. They're changing locations 5 or 6 times in a couple of years. So nobody feels tied to the ground anymore. Nobody feels like they have roots inside of their identity anymore. And even worse, the financialization of the Western economy has made it so difficult for anybody to escape the debt trap. You add into the fact that most young men, no matter how hard they work, cannot save enough money to ever own a house ever.
Yes.
So when everything's transient, everything's moving, they understand they need money because they see it on social media. They don't have any. They become lost. And once you become lost, you either totally give up and start watching porn and smoking weed and playing video games, or you become radicalized in the opposite direction and become a very dangerous person. So we have a very lost masculine youth.
But what you just described would account for any. That's not just men. Women are being are suffering from the same problems economically in the United States. No,
women are suffering, but women have an off ramp, and women off ramp. And I'm not saying that this is against them in any way. God has blessed them with beauty, and if you're a beautiful woman, or you're an attractive woman, or you're prepared to have children with a man, you could probably find somebody to take care of you. But as a man, you need to take care of her, take care of yourself, take care of the house, take care of the kids. You're a man.
Yeah,
you got a lot to do, and it's becoming harder and harder. You know, inflation and taxation completely eradicates anybody's savings in real time. You can't save money. It doesn't make sense to save money. By the time you've saved for 10 years, you have less than when you began with. So my message always to the masculine youth, the reason I became so popular was I gave a new blueprint to escape, because the blueprint that was being given by the people of the generation above, just save your money, just buy a house, just marry the first girl you meet, all these things, they weren't working anymore and people felt lost. And I think that's why I became so popular.
I understand. I understand that point. By the way, before we leave the whole situation with your charges and everything, the stories about having lots of women and recruiting them and creating some kind of, I think I heard one prosecutor call it a club or something that you had started, or a gang or something to that effect. What's the story behind that? Is there something we need to know about that?
There really is no story. The Romanian state has the same level of judicial integrity as Zambia. So anything they say, we can take with a large pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Do I know women? Yes, I'm a full-grown man. Do I know men? Of course. Do I know people? Yes, I'm a famous man. I know people. But if I had ever hurt anybody, especially with how hard they've tried to put me in jail, I wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Is the Romanian justice system in some way... Here, I'm trying to figure out the best way to ask this question. Because I know the arms of our government and Western governments reaches very far. Were the Romanians in any way mandated to go after you by Washington or somebody in Washington?
Well, I have to be careful what I say because my litigation is technically ongoing, but the fact that they became so interested overnight is not organic.
The fact that they became so interested is not organic.
Correct.
Okay. So you think there may have been some pressure?
I know there was a lot that happened, but I have ongoing litigation, so I'm going to be careful what I say.
All right, let's go back to what you were just saying about young men. I'm fascinated by this because what you're saying is that there are economic reasons that have basically deflated males in the West, and especially in the United States. But isn't there more to that? Isn't there a cultural underpinning as well? My wife yells at me all the time when we watch TV together, but when I watch television, I always say to her, look at how in every movie the man is emasculated. It's always the woman or somebody else who gets to be the powerful one, and the guy is always adult.
Correct.
Why do they do that, I say to my wife? And I'm wondering if that, is that the same thing that you're talking about?
Of course. The primary objective of all media and all social media algorithms in the West is to prevent a rebellion and to prevent a revolution. If women complain and if women go and riot throughout the street, it's an inconvenience. But if men do it, it's called a revolution. Mm. And things burn and people die and the government changes. So when you have an economy which is screwing over the majority of young men inside of your population center, the largest contingent of your population, the young men, are getting completely wrecked by the financialization of the economy, you have to make sure they don't feel too masculine. You have to make sure they don't feel too powerful.
Yeah.
You have to do the absolute opposite and emasculate them. You know, in countries which are very patriotic, even Russia, for example, and I'll make this clear, I'm a born American, my father served, I am an American, I love America, I'm unhappy with a lot of their policies and a lot of the things they're doing, but I'm an American.
Yeah, me too.
And this is my first time in Russia and I'm visiting, but you see that Russia is a very patriotic nation. And they don't fear having a masculine population because masculinity and patriotism go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia, to a degree, is a sovereign state where you know that if you have patriotic masculine men, you're going to protect Russia. But the problem is that a lot of other Western countries across the entire globe now is that if you have patriotic masculine men, they're going to look around and realize that their country's bought and sold, that it's all international finance, that it's all the Wall Street bankers and BlackRock and all these hedge funds.
Yeah.
And they're going to say, you know what? we're going to stop this gravy train. We want to take our country back. And that is why they try their very best to prevent masculinity and prevent patriotism. The two things that you think a country would want to protect itself in these Western countries, especially in Europe, they prevent that specifically because it would end the gravy train of these international bankers, which are just living off of the trading of currencies and doing no work and enjoying a great life.
Do you think they... Is there a connection between the two? I don't seem to be able to ever watch a movie in the United States with my family without watching two guys make out.
Of course.
In the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm always wondering, are there that many gays that they cannot make a movie without at least one of them making out with another guy while I'm watching a movie? And I'm not, listen, the point is, why do they have to do that? Is it just because they're trying to be diverse?
No.
Or is there something else going on?
When
there?
The Romans conquered the Greeks, they killed all the military-aged men, or the men who would soon be military-aged, because they knew that they're going to introduce a new language, a new culture, and they didn't want people growing up in a place where they felt alien and foreign because they were going to cause a rebellion. Hmm. So they just fixed the problem at its roots and murdered all the young teenage boys and got rid of all the military-aged men. We can't do that in the modern times, but what we can do is turn them all into eunuchs. Because men are looking around at their country and they don't recognize it anymore. They don't recognize any of the things their parents are talking about. They don't recognize the culture they're watching online from only the 90s, not even too long ago.
Yeah.
They don't recognize the street they grew up on. They don't recognize the school. They don't recognize the person next to them. They don't recognize anything. So you have to make these people eunuchs before they do something about it. So all of the culture of
eunuchs,
the West.
Eunuchs, you say.
Eunuchs.
You mean,
so, cut their balls off without... I'm not sure what I could say on Russian TV.
You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, make them eunuchs. Yeah. Because that's what they're afraid of. The primary objective of all media algorithms and media apparatuses in the West is to prevent a rebellion of the young men standing up and saying, you know what? No, my country has been looted for far too long. And I came along and was a problem because I wasn't even political, sir. I was saying to young men, you know what? You can win if you're not afraid to say what you believe in, go to the gym, train hard, stand up for what you believe in, be prepared to suffer, be prepared to go through the crucible for what you believe in. Mm-hmm. As soon as you start doing these things, even in a non-political manner, you become enemy of the state because you're teaching young men to stand up and point out all the things they're living amongst that they're unhappy with.
Well, but in many ways, it is a political, and there are labels that are attached to certain things that we say that keep us then from being forward thinkers and from saying those things. I'll give you an example. Once again, I'll blame it on my kids, and I love my children, but we have good conversations in our household from time to time, and my kids will accuse me of being a racist, an anti-Semite, a homophobe, this or that, throughout the course of the day. And it's not because I really did anything to deserve that, but because they have been trained that anything you do that even raises a question about any other group, which I think is perfectly fair game that we should ask questions about why people behave the way that, that's social psychology, that's sociology. And I raise those kinds of questions like you would say, you know, it's something about Russians. I've noticed Russians are very very methodical about everything and they're very rule oriented. Did you know that? Oh, you're making a judgment about Russians. That's discriminatory. Why? No, that's my observation about Russians.
Right.
But you know, and oftentimes my kids and others in America will say, don't go there. Don't say that. I think that's bad.
Well, yeah, it's weaponized virtue, right? They take the virtuous, they get people to pretend they're being virtuous and pretend they're defending some other poor, marginalized group of people. But really, it's weaponized. It's just something they can use to slander you so you don't have to discuss the idea. They can discuss the accusation and they can shut you up.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
The label.
It's the label.
The label wins.
They want to
label
you with something.
You anti-Semite. Stop it.
Well, I'm labeled as a misogynist for trying to say that a man should stick up for his family and he should pay the bills and take care of his woman. And feminists call me misogynistic for saying that a man should pay the bills.
Yeah.
And they're just going to say in the news repeatedly that I'm a misogynist, even though I have daughters, even though I have loving relationships with women, even though I've never been convicted of a crime against women in my life ever. They're just going to keep labeling me with this over and over again because it is weaponized virtue.
But is there anything wrong with a woman who happens to bring the money home and the man decides to stay at home? Let's suppose some dude decides to do that.
He sounds like a great guy. I mean, he's living a good life, isn't he? But unfortunately, life as a man, we have obligations and duties, and most of the time we end up getting lumbered with the paying the bills, and I think this is the way it should be, you know?
That's the way my father did it, that's the way my grandfather did it, and that's the way I do it.
Absolutely. So a lot of these labels, they don't have any meaning anymore. They're primarily used to make people be quiet. They're primarily used to scare people from recognizing patterns and identifying with basic pattern recognition and talking about what they see. That's all. Because we live in a world now where the veil is almost completely off. We used to, not too long ago, I really feel like 15, 20 years ago, the apparatus, the matrix, the people in charge, whatever you want to call them, they were really concerned about people at home knowing they were lying. They tried very hard to make you believe they were telling the truth. But now they've reached this interesting stage where they're just kind of like, we don't care if they know we're lying. We don't care if they know we're making it all up. Just put it out there. Who cares? So it's like, we know they're lying. They know we know they're lying. And this is kind of, to tie it in, one of the reasons I came to Russia, because I just thought it was really interesting how hard they were trying to lie to me about this country. Yeah. I didn't know the truth of Russia. It's my first trip.
Yeah.
But I just thought, well, you're lying to me about something.
Yeah.
So let me go check it out, you know? And ever since, I've been eating gorgeous food, and now I'm on a nice golf course. It is really not what they say it is.
Russia is in many ways what America was when America came out of World War II and started feeling good about itself because it had overcome.
Yeah.
And I get that sense in Russia because the 90s was hell here. It was horrible.
Yep.
They came out of communism and, you know, came away from the Soviet era, and they tried to start something new, and they had to work through it. And we didn't help them. Yep. We said we were going to help them, but we came here and, you know, we kicked them in the tooth.
America.
Kicked them in the teeth. Yep. We did worse. I was going to say something more vulgar. But unfortunately, so they had to find their way out of that, and now, when you look around, there's a spirit of optimism in this country like I don't see in my own country.
Well, America's going the opposite way. America's fading into communism. You know, New York City just elected a communist mayor, and I saw a lot of people in the conservative circles very upset about this and complaining about this. And I tied it to the message which I had highlighted before. If young men stand no chance of ever owning a home, capitalism is for capitalists, and they don't have any capital.
Yeah.
So what are they going to vote for? They're going to vote for socialism. And we're seeing socialism being voted for across the Western world now because the entire financialized system, somebody said something to me really interesting, and it's long, so I won't talk about it, but it was talking about consumer capitalism against financialized capitalism and saying that traditionally, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, if you wanted to get rich, you'd open a factory and you'd make cups and you'd sell cups, and that's how you made money. You had a profit on each item and you made money. But now they're saying that you can't open a factory and make cups anymore because you can't compete with China. And if you do open a factory that tries to sell cups, you're going to be competing with Amazon and all these monopolies. You don't stand a chance anymore. So the only way to make money is to take
money. Or some hedge fund will buy it from you and immediately it'll be gone.
They'll lowball you. And if you say no, they open up next door.
Exactly.
And they put you out of business, right? So the only way you can make money now is to turn money into money via the stock market, which of course gives more power to the monopolies, which means you have to have money to make money in the first place. How do you get your first money now?
But this makes
it even harder than ever before.
But here's the thing. I don't call it communism. I mean, I don't think by giving it a label, we describe it or make people understand it properly. I think what it is a system where nobody gives a crap about the people who live in the country. And essentially, it is some very powerful people, and every day there are fewer and fewer of them, who are basically running the lives of the rest of us. And that's not good either.
Yeah,
you know?
And I guess that also ties into where I was saying that young men are lost because, you know, they're lost financially. They can't see a way out to make money besides gambling or getting lucky in some regard.
Yeah.
They're lost politically because they believe their vote doesn't count because all of the politicians are bought and sold and the entire system runs on money.
Mm-hmm.
They're lost romantically because they're a 19-year-old boy and the 19-year-old girl they go to school with is in Monaco on a 50-year-old billionaire's yacht. So he doesn't stand a chance with her.
Mm-hmm.
They're lost in every single direction. They're just standing there going, what do I do?
And
what I highlighted, the blueprint I built many years ago, friends and I put together an online education system that taught people how to make money online, and we started teaching young men how to make money, and this is where my problems began, because I think I was showing a lot of young men that the traditional path laid out to them by the Matrix doesn't work. My path did work. They feared my power, and then they came for me.
Well, how do you teach somebody to make money? Money is something that comes from understanding how money works and being brave enough to invest and investing in the right things. I mean, that's a whole process. I mean, what did you do? What were you doing? Or what is your, you don't have to give it away for free here,
sure.
But essentially, what is it that you did to make you so popular among young men?
Yeah,
was it that?
Yes, we built an online educational platform. It was an online school where you could sign up and every day there are live calls and there are 12 different money-making methods, crypto trading, stock trading, e-commerce. There's all these different ways to make money online. We have professors doing live calls you can join. There's a community aspect where you can sit there and ask questions inside of the chat.
And that's how you made your wealth.
Correct. And we were teaching young men how to make money online effectively. We were saying, look, if you're prepared to work, I'm not saying it's going to be easy. The gym is a scam if you don't lift the weights. Yeah. It's not going to be easy. Yeah. I'm not saying you're going to instantly be a millionaire, but we will teach you how to make some money online. If you want to go learn philosophy, you can do it in a university. If you want to make money, we'll teach you how to make money. And this is how we became very, very popular and very large. And this is why I first became an enemy of the state, primarily in European countries, because as I understand now, and I didn't understand at the time, they're very afraid of anybody who has any influence over the masculine youth because they're looking at a rebellion.
Once again, I've looked at some of the things that you've said, and I thought some of them were offensive, frankly. And, you know, I can say that to you as a man because I disagree. But that doesn't mean that doesn't mean that you may not be on to something in terms of helping people understand that they need to get out of their rut. And I think the fact that you were creating something for young men to somehow empower them, both from a monetary standpoint and from a cultural standpoint, I think you may have been onto something.
Well, sorry to interrupt you, sir, but let's analyze this, right? If you're making your own money from home, you are not going to be indoctrinated by the liberalized education system. If you're making your own money from home, you're not going to be indoctrinated by the liberalized HR system.
Yeah.
If you're making your own money from home, you can't be canceled. You can't be told, be quiet or you lose your job.
Right.
You don't have to sit through 5 years of being told that a man in a wig is a woman. Mm. You don't have to go through any of this once you start making your own money. And then if you start making your own money and living a good life, you're going to feel powerful, right?
Yeah.
There's a saying, which I'm not going to use, but in English, we call it FU money. Once you get to that point, you're going to start saying, you know what? I'm calling out this and I'm calling out that and I'm calling out that.
Right.
This is wrong and that's wrong. So you talk about getting men out of the rut. The real question here is, do the governments of Europe want men out of the rut? Yeah. Do they want men out of the rut? Because the second they get out of the rut, what are they going to do? They're going to try and take the countries back.
They don't want men, they want mice.
Absolutely. So we have an organized system with NGOs, charities, culture, Netflix, porn, weed, gambling, whatever you want to call it. All of these things are deliberately suppressing the masculine spirit so that a man is nothing more than a shell of himself, a tax slave, sitting in an office, scared of a HR department, threatening to get fired every 5 minutes, sitting there watching his country go down the pan. And that's what's happened. And that's why I got in so much trouble for pointing that out.
So, you know, it's funny. What you're talking about is fear.
Of course.
Everyone is fearful.
Absolutely.
Which is why they don't buck the system. They don't criticize the system. They just get along to go along. And that's where the weakness comes in. Then add to that what happens in America culturally, because if you watch television, if you watch a movie, if you read a newspaper, the message that's sent to men is you don't matter as much. And we're supposed to make fun of you.
Absolutely.
And you need to make fun of yourself. Yep. And it's other people who are not like you who we are going to, you know, hold up, even though it may not necessarily be true.
That's right. You're supposed to build the roads. You're supposed to join the army and die in a ditch if needed. You're supposed to pay the taxes, and you're supposed to come home and have no opinion, no control, no authority. You're supposed to be nothing. You're just a serf. You're a slave now. You're a slave to the system. That's what they want men to be, and that's what they're trying to build men into, and it's all done very deliberately. This whole idea, people think I'm anti-woman because I'm anti-feminism. This is not the case whatsoever. I'm pro-woman. I believe that a man and a woman together creates life. This is the most important thing on the planet. There's nothing more important for a country, for a nation, for the planet than beautiful children.
But
a man and a woman. But feminism is deliberately being used to bash men over the heads. This is a different thing than woman empowerment.
I don't think there's anything wrong with having a position that's very pro-male, and I think right now that's actually sorely needed in our society. But do you look back on some of the things that you may have said, Andrew, and say, you know, I probably shouldn't have said those things. It may have been a little too mean from time to time.
Have I said jokes which could be seen as, you know, perhaps a little bit too far by a subsect of the populace? Of course I have.
Yeah.
I'm a human. Right?
Yeah.
Of course I've said things which could have been seen as too far. But considering we now live in a world where, for all the reasons we just discussed, our nations are being plundered, they're being completely raped from the inside out, the women themselves are being raped in England, for example, the entire world is falling apart. Is the few jokes I've said that perhaps were a bit too far the worst things that are happening on this planet? I mean, you and I can talk for the next 6 hours about the disgusting things that are happening on this planet right now. The fact that they bring up my old jokes from 5-6 years ago in an attempt to slander me which is what they do in the Western media, with all the things that have transpired in the last 5 to 6 years, when they locked everyone in their house and didn't let them see their dying grandmas, when they did all these heinous things, they try and pretend I'm the boogeyman. It's not, I don't think it's genuine.
Do you think it happens in the United States, for example, that when somebody starts saying something they don't want them to say, be they a congressman or a president? Well, I'll give you an example.
Sure.
I'll give you an example. Let's talk about one right now. Thomas Massie was just taken out.
Yep.
He was literally just an entity, and I think I know who that entity is, said, we got to get him out of there. What's it going to cost? I think $32 to $34 million. No problem. Where do we need to put the money? Kentucky. Where's Kentucky? I don't know. It's some state in the United States. Get it done. And they did it.
Yeah.
I mean,
everything has a price. And this is the thing that's so dangerous, right? And this is why people are so disenfranchised with the political system, because everything has a price now.
But my point is, if they can, did they do to you what you think they have done to others for many years in the past, including presidents? Some people say they did it to Richard Nixon, that Watergate was all something that was created because he was, once again, one of the people who was bucking the power base.
Correct.
You know?
The
donor class.
Absolutely. If they take a lie and they repeat the lie over and over and over again, the lie becomes the truth. The sky is blue because you and I agree it's blue. If you and I agree it's green, it's green. And they know this. And they've been doing this for the longest time. I do think that their attempt to psyop the populations of Earth is breaking. I do think mainstream media in many ways, especially in the West, has lost all credibility.
Oh, yeah.
And many people just laugh at them now. But now we have algorithms which are controlling people's minds. Who controls the algorithms? Who watches the watcher? You know, you can go on your girlfriend's algorithm on TikTok or Instagram or whatever and see a completely different world than yours. So you wonder where she's getting these ideas from. You wonder where your children are learning the things that they learn. You wonder why your children are saying to you about racism and homophobia. Who's teaching them this stuff? Social media algorithms now. So we live in a world where everyone is almost living in their own curated reality. And we're supposed to all live amongst each other and intermingle and get along, but we have all these completely different worldviews depending on what we're being fed, what we believe, what version of history we believe, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, what's black, what's white, what's up, what's down. So it's a really complicated place, and that's one of the reasons I came to Russia. I had to see it for myself. I didn't know what to believe.
Yeah.
You watch the news, I don't believe anything on the news. You watch the internet, one thing says up, one thing says down, one says left, one says right. It's kind of like we're going back in time where the only thing you can trust left is your own eyes, your own feelings, and personal interactions.
And I will tell you this about Russia. There's a lot more unity here than I see in most other places. There's a real sense of cohesion. And by the way, you're perfectly fine being gay in Russia. You could be trans in Russia. You can be whatever you want to be in Russia. What you can't do in Russia is create a movement to push that.
Absolutely.
That's the difference.
Because you're damaging the family.
There's no, what is it we have in the United States that we celebrate? Gay Pride Month. So my child has to go to a school and celebrate Gay Pride Month in the United States. That would never exist or pass in muster. By the way, I'm Hispanic, as you know. I was born in Cuba. I don't like the idea that we make people celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month or Black History Month. I don't think we should celebrate any of those things. We should celebrate America. And if you want to celebrate any of those things in the privacy of your home, or if you want to make a club, great.
Yeah. Well, that's
but that's the difference I'm talking about.
Well, that's a forced attack on masculinity. And then you have to sit here and analyze. You have to sit and go, okay, because of the labor market, the mother and the father are both forced to work to make ends meet. So now you have both parents away from the household. Both are stressed. Both are doing long hours away from home. My child is forced to go to school. He must go to school. The curriculum is whatever the government says it is. When he's not in school, he's scrolling up and down social media. The AI algorithm is deciding what they're going to see this month. Mm-hmm. They decide if Pride Month is real or not. Some people are going to have a phone full of it. Some people aren't. It all depends on what the AI has decided for this particular individual. So you're sitting there and going, okay, I get 20 minutes a day with my child trying to counteract 8 hours of school brainwashing, 6 hours of social media brainwashing. I get 20 minutes when I'm already exhausted. I'm fighting the most powerful entities on the planet trying to keep my child sane. Is the kid even yours anymore? Like, you get to a point where it's completely, the world's lost its mind. Then I came along on social media telling them, listen to your parents. That was one of my primary messages. My primary message was, do what your parents say. That was one of my primary messages, which got me in trouble in the West because they knew that their parents would tell them to think differently than they're being told to think everywhere else.
Why would parents tell their children? Why would their parents? I don't understand what you just said. Why would parents hurt their children and give them bad advice?
I don't think they'd hurt them and give them bad advice. I think it's actually the opposite. I think that if you have children, I'm talking from personal experience at least, you want them to at least replicate you or represent you well.
Oh, I see. So you're saying we should listen to our elders because their experience will probably serve us well.
I think, yes. I think if you carry a last name, your father or your mother, they had you to be a representation of that last name into eternity, and they want you to think like them to a degree. This is the whole point of family honor and creed. And I was saying you should obey your parents over school. If your parents say something and the school says the opposite, you should listen to your parents.
Well, but we make fun of our elders nowadays because we think we know better. And when I am one of those elders.
I'm almost there.
Yeah.
I'm almost there.
But what we do, I think, is young people say they get their social learning from the internet, from TV commercials, from television shows, from movies. So they apply that and put that above what their parents' experiences are. That's why guys like me get yelled at by their kids all the time.
Of course, but what is a young man supposed to be dutiful or honorable to nowadays? This is a really interesting question that shapes all of society. For the longest period of human time, you were dutiful and honorable to your last name.
Yeah.
I am Andrew Tate, son of Emery Tate. I have to represent the Tate name.
Yeah.
My son will represent the Tate name. Right, so now...
That's fair. That's how I feel, by
absolutely.
The way, too. Yeah.
So if you're not representing your last name anymore, you're not representing your town because you change locations every 5 minutes, you're not representing a company because you lose your job every 2 years, you're not representing the woman you're with because she runs off with some other guy, you're not representing your country because it's not yours and you don't get a vote. Like, what are you representing? What are you doing? Just chasing money and spending on... You're just chasing dollars all day long?
Yeah.
Because if you're just chasing money, then you end up in the exact position we're in, where people are just chasing money all day at any expense, and they're just using the power they gain from the money to make more money, and the entire system rots.
But who put us in that position? I mean, I think there is something to the Epstein class. I think there is a group of people out there who are so freaking powerful that they can just do whatever the hell they want, and when they want people to think a certain way, they're powerful enough to shape the media message to make that happen. Is it possible that some of those people are the ones who kind of created this?
Well, I mean, they're the people who are too powerful to go to jail, right? Because
yeah.
If they can't go to jail without tanking the entire American economy.
Not a single one of them has gone to jail. Not one.
I said this on a podcast I did.
And you did.
Yeah, I said this. I said this on a podcast. I said before the list, when everyone was talking about this list coming out, I said, guys, you must be pretty foolish to believe that the silly idea of criminal justice is going to get in the way of the largest hedge funds and economic instruments on the planet,
yeah,
based out of New York City and Miami and Los Angeles. This is America, and money rules, and they're not going to allow stock prices to tank for something silly like justice or, you know, a criminal case,
yeah, right,
or little
right,
girls.
Yeah.
So these people have too much power because the entire system is bought and paid for. And that's why, I mean, America is a very rich country, but it's very rich for who? It's staying very rich for a smaller and smaller subsect of the population. And this is going to end one way or another. I can't see a positive ending to the fact that the majority of people can't pay their bills. The majority of people can't go and see a doctor. The majority of people hate the country they now live in. They look around and they don't recognize anyone they're next to. They don't speak the same language. They don't have the same religion. Nothing.
Yeah.
And they're standing there and they're looking at this subsect, the top 0.5% on social media being blasted into their phones all day on yachts in Monaco. I mean, how long can this possibly go on? If there's patriotism, if there's hegemony, if there's people sitting there going, okay, you know what? He's got a big factory. He's made a lot of money. And I don't have a big factory. But you know what? He's Russian. I'm Russian. We're both here for Russia. We're doing our best for our country.
Yeah.
That's a very different scenario than seeing a country as an economic zone to be extracted from. And I think that's what a lot of people are now starting to feel in the West. My country is an economic zone. It's being extracted from. Everyone's extracting except me. I'm left with the taxes and the useless vote. And I've had enough.
Well, the world is changing. And I don't know if you've been noticing the geopolitical changes, but with this alliance that has been formed in this global South communities, countries like Russia and China coming together, oh my God, just from a GDP standpoint, from a standing army standpoint, from a hydrocarbon standpoint, from an economy standpoint. Now you add to that South Africa, throw in India, throw in what Iran is about to become. These are forces to be reckoned with. I'm not sure that our country, as great as it is, and it's still the number one economy in the world, is going to be able to stand up to this. And just wanting to go to war with these countries, I think, will backfire.
Yeah, this is the dying of empires. They always go down in a bloody splash, unfortunately. They always go out with a bang. But I agree with you. I think that one of the main reasons I wanted to come and see Russia is because the global hegemony and the World War II order, which was set up, is clearly collapsing. this isn't going to last much longer.
Yeah.
There's a lot of countries in the world that have been forgotten about. You named a bunch of them. There's huge population centers that no one talks about in the West. No one talks about
Indonesia.
Indonesia.
Yeah,
you just took the words out of my mouth.
Crazy. You know,
Malaysia, Indonesia. You're talking about hundreds of millions of
people.
Nobody even talks about these countries and these huge population centers.
Vietnam is another one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the fact that our population is dwindling, unless we import people who are only there to extract because we're an economic zone.
Or we go to these countries, we destroy the countries with unnecessary wars. The people have no place to go, so then they come to these countries, and then we say, what are you doing here? Well, you destroyed my country.
Well,
we did it in Guatemala, we did it in Syria, we did it in Libya.
Without patriotism, why would any person who is making money make less money for the good of the nation? And also, why would anybody do that if none of the other people who have power are doing it either? So we're in a real interesting quagmire, chicken and egg.
Yeah.
You need all of the people inside of America and Western countries to say, you know what, I'm going to take a 90% pay cut and do what is right for America. And I need not only me, I need the other 4,000 billionaires to do the same at the same time instantly. Otherwise, I'm just a sucker and I'm going to lose and get replaced and get bought out.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, they're going to continue to just raid the safe on the Titanic, take all the gold and nice necklaces and pretty jewelry and anything they can find, knowing it's hit the iceberg, making sure they have a nice nest egg to get onto the lifeboat with. And that's what's going to happen. And that's why they're called the globalist capital class. They'll just move somewhere else. They'll take the money with them and they'll continue to live their lives. But the people who are left in America have to suffer the consequences.
Yeah, and they are. And they are. And you're absolutely right. Things are real hard right now. The latest CPI numbers in the United States, my God, I know they don't affect most people like you and I, but the average person just trying to make a living and feed their family right now is having a really tough time with it. I mean, consumer goods are way, way up. Inflation, way, way up. Let's not even talk about the price of gas.
Yeah.
It's tough. And like you said, the average guy gets out of school. I'm old enough to remember where, you know, my wife and I, after I graduated from the University of Minnesota, we started a family. I was able to buy a house for like $100,000. I mean, you know, it was a nice house. Today, for $100,000, you can't get crap. You can't.
That's true. I mean, you wouldn't be safe to leave your house. You wouldn't be safe to go outside if you find a $100,000 house.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, it's getting nearly impossible. And being tied to a home ties you to a location, which ties you to an interest in that town, that street, that district. You now care, right? You care about it. If you rent, you don't care. You move. You can move somewhere else. But if you are tied to a place because that is your home, you really do care about the curriculum of the local school because that's your house.
Yes.
So the fact that all of these homes are being bought up by huge pools of international capital, by huge hedge funds.
What you just said is interesting, Andrew, because, you know, as you know, I'm a journalist, I'm in media. What you just said is the same argument that I use for what's happened in our country. You know, there was a time when, if you lived in Kalamazoo, the guy who owned the local newspaper in Kalamazoo was your neighbor.
Yep.
And he cared about Kalamazoo.
Yep.
And the guy who owned, you know, the nightly news station there, the local TV station we all watched. I used to be the guy who anchored the local station in Miami, for example. And it was owned by a local guy. Today, that doesn't exist.
Of course.
There is no local ownership of anything in the United States, not even a hardware store.
That's right. So it's owned by a hedge fund, which is 2,000 miles away. And the only reason they own it is to make as much profit as possible, irregardless of the damage it does to the town it's in. They don't care. They want money. That's it.
That's well said.
That's right.
You're not an economist, but I'll tell you, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm not an economist, but I've been around and I've seen a few patterns. And it turns out that, you know, the world we're living in now is a very, very scary place for young men and to avoid being called a misogynist and young women. You know, it is scary. I often say,
am I changing you?
Well, no, sir. I'll tell you, I have daughters, right? And I do sit and I think, you know, when I was 19, I'm 39 now, so 20 years ago, when I was 19, my girlfriend was 19, we both went to high school. We'd never heard of Saint-Tropez. We'd never heard of Dubai. We'd never heard of a yacht. I'd never seen a Lamborghini in my life. I didn't know what any of these things were. I'd never seen them. We're just two people, 19, in a small town, just in love, and that was it. And now I sit and think, what's going to happen when my daughter gets to 17, 18, 19 years old, being constantly flooded with this excess wealth and seeing all these girls being bought all these expensive things? If only they go and do this whatever, God knows where. And I'm going to be the guy trying to stop her doing it. And I'm going to be the bad guy. And all the social media is going to be in her face all the time telling her this is how life should be lived. And, you know, hopefully she's beautiful. So she's going to have a really blessed life and she's going to have a whole bunch of offers. And young women are just as lost as young men. And especially as the economy gets harder and harder. Young women just fall into the laps of these men with all this money. And this is how the world is now turning. You wonder why no one's having families anymore. If you want to grow a birth rate of a country, you need to concern yourself with the average man and the average woman and them being able to afford having a family. You can't just have only the richest being able to afford to have kids.
In the end, though, I think one of the things that this all comes down to is the things that we should have had foundationally. My father always said to me, maybe your father said something similar. He said, son, throughout your life, and God bless my dad, you know, he passed away a couple of years ago, and I miss him to this day. But he always said, everything in life is about your foundation. Yeah. And if your foundation isn't good, somewhere along the line, you will crumble. Yeah. And that's so true. And I think it doesn't matter what you believe in, but you have to have some belief in something bigger than yourself. You know, I happen to be Catholic, and I'm a Christian, and I believe in God. And I believe in the things that are supposed to make us better as human beings that are outside of just the things that are so, mechanical and capitalistic. Yep. And not that there's anything wrong with gaining wealth, for example.
Of course.
But you got to have something underneath that. Yep. And I think in many ways, our country, we're losing our way because of that as well. I think the people running our countries could give a crap about God.
Yep.
And that's why they give a crap about the people who live in America.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. And I think living for something larger than yourself is probably one of the easiest ways to describe masculinity as a whole. We've talked about young men and masculinity a lot today, but whether you're living and dying for a flag or living and dying for your family or living and dying for a town or a factory or a religion,
foundation,
whatever it is, it's the foundation. It's waking up every day and saying, you know what, I don't feel like doing this, but it must be done because the idea that I'm trying to uphold is bigger than how I personally feel. I'm going to dedicate myself to it. And that's why even just now I was in St. Petersburg and I looked at this beautiful, the Church of Spilt Blood or something.
Yes.
It's called. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. And you sit there and think, people dedicated their lives to this building knowing they would never see it completed. They knew that the building was more important. They saw the building as bigger than themselves. They dedicated their entire living span of life to this building. This is such an incredible thing, which is disappearing now. And ties into what I said earlier about people changing jobs so quickly, changing towns, changing sexual partners, changing whatever. Nobody even holds a point of view for more than 5 minutes anymore. Nobody is thinking about anything larger than themselves. They're all concerned with themselves and narcissism and the social media algorithm and what makes me happy right now. I don't want to do anything I don't want to do. How do I win? And this is the world we live in.
There's something weird happening in Russia. I don't know if you've noticed this or have read about it, but like we in America are moving away from religion in many ways, real religion, not political religion.
Yep.
Here, they're rebuilding the churches that were knocked down by the Soviets. They're going in and rebuilding the churches and rebuilding communities around God and around Christianity. It's the craziest thing that I just didn't expect to see when I came here. But as long as, I've been here now almost a year, maybe a little more, and I've noticed that there's almost a burgeoning of religion here that you don't see in the West. And I think in the end, that's a good thing. Meanwhile, our media tells us that these people are all, God-hating communists. Nothing could be more the opposite.
Well, that's one of the most, refreshing things about coming to Russia is that you meet the actual people.
Yeah.
You see the families in the park. You meet the people. You have dinner with them. You talk to them. You look around. Because in the West, we're told that Russia is simply a sanctioned area of Earth. They talk about the sanctions. Like we talked about earlier, they talk about the accusations, not the ideas.
Right.
They don't want to talk about the truth of anything. They want to talk about what it's accused of.
Same as
Ukraine. Same as everyone else.
Look at the situation with Ukraine. The president of Ukraine is not the president of Ukraine. He hasn't been elected. Nobody knows that. Could you imagine if we had in America a president who said, I'm just going to cancel the election. I'm just going to stay here. Why? Because there's a war. Lincoln didn't do that during the Civil War. Roosevelt didn't do that during World War II. You can't just say, I'm going to stay in office.
And the largest concern, I think, for most Americans now is every single thing we've talked about and all of the problems we've identified are being hyper-amplified by the fact that American money just disappears overseas all of the time.
$300 billion.
That's right. So whether it's going to the Middle East, whether it's going to transgenders in Tanzania, whether it's going to, Ukraine, anywhere else. Americans are sitting there and they're really feeling angry because they're like, okay, not only do we have all these problems, not only do we have all these tangible issues I can see all around me and feel every day, but our money is disappearing down the black hole of God knows where for God knows who, and that's all washed up and divvied back out in some order.
No,
unknown.
You're, you know, you make,
so this is
you
why
make
people
some
are
sound
angry.
Arguments. 80% of your audience are young men, by the way.
Correct.
Which is incredible. But when I say young men, I mean, you know, in their teens even.
Yeah.
Is that the message that you are going to continue to propagate? Is that, or you're getting a little older in the tooth? Does it change? Or
yeah, so I have a lot of young men, and then they come to me for solutions. They say, "How do I make money? Or how do I get a girlfriend? Or I feel unhappy. I feel depressed, etc."
How do I get a girlfriend?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I get asked everything. And my answer is always the same. I try and reframe. I think it's important.
Try talking to him.
Well, yeah. Like I said earlier, it's important that, you know, your worldview, you live inside of your own head. You decide how you see the world. You decide how you feel. And when people complain about things being difficult and saying how hard it is to succeed, I try and reframe that and say that difficulty is the barrier that prevents everyone else from taking what you want. The girl you want, someone else wants. The money you want, someone else wants. The car you want, someone else wants. If it wasn't difficult, it'd already be gone. There has to be a rainbow for the pot of gold to be at the end of. Because if the pot of gold was at the beginning of the rainbow, there wouldn't be any gold. So all of the difficulty that you feel as a young man when you wake up and you think this is going to be really hard, I can't find a way to make money, girls won't talk to me, I don't like going to the gym, I don't want to train, all that difficulty is actually fantastic. That's the barrier that's prevented everyone else from stealing your glory. So when you feel difficulty, you're heading in the right direction, like a video game. When you find enemies, you're heading in the right direction. When you feel like life is getting hard, you know you're doing something right. Perhaps that's where they made the mistake putting me in jail. I knew I was doing something good. I was like, this is getting hard all of a sudden. I know I'm headed in the right direction. And I think that's my primary message to young men. And not everybody's going to win, but I do believe those who deserve to win, those who are truly prepared to suffer enough to win, will win. And you have to believe the universe is fair in that way.
You got to work it.
That's right.
You
got to
work it. It doesn't come easy.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right. Hey, this has been a really good conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Moscow.
Thank you,
sir. Or welcome to Augusta. I know you must be looking around going, hey, wait a minute. This is Russia, really? That's a pretty good-looking golf course.
I mean, it's red, but it's not the red square. But, you know, it's a nice place to be.
Something like that. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, sir.
And good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck. Thank you very much. Well, that's it for us. Wow. What a conversation. You know, Andrew Tate has been someone who has been followed by literally millions of people all over the world. And then because of his controversy, that only made him even more popular. Now he finds himself in an opportunity to be able to share his story with others. And he was kind enough to share his story with us. And we are very appreciative of his graciousness for coming out here and telling us and taking the hard questions, right? Which I think is extremely important as well. I want to thank all of you for being with us while we were in St. Petersburg last week. Now we're back in Moscow. We should be back on the air or in the studio throughout the middle of this week, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you from there. 10, 20 million of you who are checking in, and I appreciate you being there. But most of all, I just appreciate the fact that you let us into your homes with what you have to say, negative, positive in the end. We appreciate all of it. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll be looking for you next time.